I think they want it to be a mental game as well. They really want you to, like a lot of the courses we played, you can make a lot of birdies and generally, well, if you're playing well, you do. But I think the USGA, they really want to test every aspect of your game. And, you know, golf's 90% mental a lot of the time. So they really, really want to test that part of your game and try and get you angry. They're not the usual greens that we play on week in, week out.
Well, that was Mark Leishman who joined me during the week, of course, talking about Chambers Bay and also the way they trump up these courses at the US Open to make it a mental challenge as well as a skill challenge as well. Mark Hayes, of course, is Golf Australia's media manager and one of the great golf writers on the world circuit when he was writing for the newspapers, has been good enough to join us. G'day, Mark.
G'day, KB. Nice to talk to you.
Mark, it was interesting with Mark Leishman telling us that this is all about a mental test by US Golf Association in terms of trumping up these courses, and it seems that everything we've heard or read about Chambers Bay, they've done a very good job.
This is a total beast, KB. It's something unlike the USGA has ever rolled out for its national championship before. There's one tree on the course, the perimeter's lined by trees, but there's only one tree on the course. It looks, especially from above, like a British Link style course, but one of the main things that's going to make this course an absolute brute is it's got elevation changes of approaching 60 metres, and they climb up and down the course several times during the round. And the course has got four of the longest five par fours in US Open history, all over 500 yards or well over 500 yards in most cases. And they can play it. They're not going to, but they can play it as long as 7,900 yards, which would make it the longest course, you know, ever seen in a major championship. I think they're going to try and get it around 7,700 tomorrow in good conditions, which still just shows you how much of a beast it is. And it's seriously dry, unseasonably hot up here in the Pacific Northwest. So it's going to be a real serious test of both your skills around the greens especially, but also just to be able to hang on in such trying conditions.
Now, obviously, in talking to Mark, and he mentioned about that hole, one of the holes is 540 yards, so it's a par four. So, obviously, after they hit their driver, they've got to pull out the three wood, I suggest, and have another whack.
It's actually funny, KB. I was watching Jason Day play it with Kevin Na the other day, and they're almost the polar extremes of length on the PGA Tour. There's a couple of longer hitters than Day, but not many. The ground is so long, and he took a different line to Nah, who's one of the shorter hitters. The ball bounced so hard and so firmly that it rolled down, and he had something like a 7-iron into that. Even though it's 540-plus yards, an elevation drop off that tee, he had a 7-iron in. Meanwhile, Kevin Nah had a 3-wood, and I challenge anyone to beat Jason Day. Difference. I mean, that's just ridiculous to think that Kevin Nah could, you know, try to compete with Day with a 3-wood when Day's got a 7-iron in his hand. So if you can manage to pump on out there, like Mark Leishman can for sure, it's going to give a big advantage.
Just tell us your thoughts on Jason Day for starters. So I've been reading a lot of stories on Jason Day. He hasn't been very well for a long time. He's been suffering dizzy spells. He's had a lot of tests, and I know he's been to hospital on a couple of occasions. Have you had a chance to speak to him, see how he's feeling?
I have, and he says he's good to go. He's A1. He's actually had some pretty serious tests on KB since he withdrew from the just before the Byron Nelson tournament in Texas a few weeks ago with complaining of vertigo. He had some pains in his arm and some tingling, and he had some MRIs on his neck. He's done some sleep tests and some blood tests. They've all come back clear except the last sleep test he's still waiting on. So it's been pretty serious for him, probably more serious than we first imagined. But he says he's A-OK, and just watching him hit the ball, there's simply no holding him back in terms of his length, and he's fine, so he's sleeping as well as he can, so everything seems like all right.
Well, we've got eight Aussies. We have won it in the past, of course, with Jeff Ogilvie and also David Graham in that famous win at Merion. But Steve Williams is back out of retirement. He's on the bag for Adam Scott now. Tell us a story about this. And, you know, obviously Adam Scott just feels that once he's lost Steve Williams, he lost his right-arm man, and he was able to encourage him to come out of retirement.
You know, the funny thing was, KB, we were talking to Stevie yesterday, and he was very calm, as if he'd sort of been gagged and unnecessarily so, but he was very coy, very un-Stevie Williams-like. It didn't sound like him, but you can imagine the story now that at some stage in the next three major championships, if Scotty finds that form again, can you imagine what Stevie Williams is going to add to the last chapter of his book on his golfing caddying career? Because he will be unstoppable if he can talk up how he resurrected Adam Scott's 2015 season, that's for sure.
Can he do it? Can he make a difference for Scott?
I can actually talk to you about all the other guys and how they're hitting it and everything like that. Adam Scott remains to me the mystery of the Australian contingent. He's talking a good game. He seems to be playing really well from tee to green. But he's in, as we discussed a few weeks ago, KB, he's 180th or something like that in the US tour ranks on the on strokes gained putting this year. And he can't win unless he putts half decently here. He can't win anywhere if he putts like that. So the absolute acid test here, he reckons it's an alignment problem. These greens are bumpy. They've got a grass that isn't going to make the ball roll truly. So it could bring the good putters back to him a little bit. That's probably going to work in his favour. But if he comes out and misses a couple of four-footers early, I've got question marks still, but he's talking a very big game.
Well, maybe that's the strength of Steve Williams, because there is that marvellous story when he won the Masters that Adam Scott wanted to take a certain line on that famous last putt, and Steve Williams said, no, you've got to go at least another two or three inches to the right, or you've got to go a lot wider than that. I can tell you the break is a lot bigger than you think it is, and of course he held that famous putt. So maybe that's something that Steve Williams can bring to him, maybe just the confidence that he'll give him the line. He'll hit it if he gives him the line.
I think that's absolutely right. I'm not sure if Scotty would actually be so direct in answering that in the affirmative, but I, from talking to him yesterday, he's very much in favour of Stevie Williams contributing to his rounds a bit more than Mike Kerr had done previously. And he said openly to us he wants to get the spark back, and he thinks Stevie Williams is the man to do that. And Williams is upbeat as ever. I mean, he's not sure that he wants to do this instead of racing cars and coaching his son's rugby team, but given that he's back and he's committed to come across to New Zealand for four tournaments for the rest of this season, he's up and about. I can assure you he's not coming across just to, just to lug the sticks around and just smile nicely for the cameras. He wants to win, and he thinks he can make Scott win, and Scott equally is positive by the sounds of him.
Need your thoughts on Tiger Woods. He's now ranked the 195th player in the world. He'll have more focus on him than the number one player in the world after what happened at Memorial, shooting 85. And we've been talking about this course, and there's rough, and it's dangerous course now. He could walk off after 12 holes if all of a sudden they can't find his ball on four or five occasions. How's he been hitting the ball, and what's the general feeling? And am I right in saying that everyone's going to focus on Tiger Woods because we just don't know what to expect?
There was going to be a focus on Tiger regardless. We all know that. We've seen that for the last 20 years. But when he had his 85 the other day, the microscope just got blown up on his game just all over again. So he could come out tomorrow and he could shoot a 70 and par and he'll be a story. He could come out tomorrow, and I'm not kidding you, he could shoot in the low 90s tomorrow. No problem at all on this course. And that's going to be one of the great mysteries. Jason Day played with him in a practice round, and we were talking to him about it afterwards, and Day basically said he wasn't driving well. He didn't make the song and dance about it. He wasn't being rude. He just said Tiger's not driving the ball very well. And KB, between you and I, if you're not going to be driving the ball well on this course, you're not going to be signing for anything under the mid-80s. So Tiger's had his career worst score, but if he can't control the big dog tomorrow and on Friday, American time, he's going to have another one of those scores for sure.
Always great to catch up, Mark. In fact, Marcus Fraser's going to join us after he plays his round tomorrow on the program, so we'll find out a little bit more about the course and also about the Aussies, how they've gone, and also particularly Tiger Woods as well. So, Mark, thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure, KB. Hope everyone enjoys the tournament.
For all the latest news and interviews and progress of the eight Aussies taking part in the US Open, all you have to do is head to golf.org.au. Mark Hayes is the man on the ground covering all the action. We'll take a break. When we come back, Michelangelo Rucci.